Hello and welcome to the Cali Outdoorsman podcast. And today we have Tim. You want to say hi, Tim?
Hey, what's up?
And what's your last name again? Tim
Reeser.
And you run, I know that you have your, your outdoors thing. Is it just the Instagram page? Or do you have other stuff like YouTube or anything like that?
I have a YouTube. I just haven't posted many videos. I kind of posted some of my arrow builds, and then I just posted my video for my turkey hunt on that as well.
Okay. So, like, most people can find you though on Instagram. Is basically your main platform, right? And TMR Outdoors, right? Is your Instagram? Okay. So anyways, me and you connected. How did we even we had connected basically through Instagram, right? I think you might have actually reached out to me first when we were talking about bird hunting with
It was honestly a long time ago.
Yeah.
Because I've been out here for 8 years now, and I'm pretty sure you were one of the first few people that I came in contact with. It just wasn't until this year
met.
Yeah.
So what, how did you end up finding it? Like, how did you get connected with my page? Just like out, like searching through hashtags or something on Instagram?
I had a couple, you know how when you follow other people, you get like a couple of recommendations.
And
I believe I followed California Hunting or SoCal Hunt and Fish, and then your page came up, and then I know I was kind of looking for people who were more or less responsive in a sense, being brand new, and then I know that I got connected with you, and we kind of talked a little bit, and then that's kind of where our, distant relationship kind of started.
There you go. Yeah, so, let's get started kind of a little bit on your background. So where, you said you moved out here about 8 years ago. Where did you move from? Like, where are you originally from?
I was born and raised in Bangor, Pennsylvania. It's probably 2 hours east of Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm used to the whole, backwoods, I'm not used to the city life and having to drive an hour and a half to go hunting. I could hunt pretty much walk into my backyard and walk down the trail and good to go.
Yeah, so Pennsylvania, I've never actually been to Pennsylvania. It's like pretty wooded, right?
Like a lot of it's so wooded unless you're kind of in the, and there's a lot of fields and like farming, agriculture is big too there.
Oh, okay. So, and you're, did you move out here for, because you're in the military, correct?
Yeah, I'm active duty Navy. So okay. I moved out here. I joined in 2012 and went to boot camp and then came out here in 2013.
Okay.
In January, and then I've been cruising ever since.
And you're in, you're stationed down in San Diego?
Yes. Okay. Naval Base San Diego.
Nice. One of my buddies, I can't remember because the is it the same? I haven't actually been. I've worked at the military bases up here, the Navy bases Port Hueneme and Point Magoo. But down there, is it separate for the Marines, or do the Marines operate within the Naval Base? I don't know.
So obviously you have Camp Pendleton, but then the Marines kind of come down on some of the ships, so they'll just come and operate inside of the base, and they'll come onto the ships and so on.
I was saying, because one of my good friends from high school was he was stationed down in San Diego for a long time. He was a Marine, but he worked on the helicopters. He was like one of the helicopter gunner or something like that. So, but anyways. So did you, a little bit more on your backstory, did you grow, you obviously out in the woods, you probably started hunting and stuff back home, yeah?
Yeah, I was, hunting since I was 12 years old. My first deer was a little spike buck, kind of your first deer. And, that's kind of where I went from that. And I didn't start bow hunting until I was about 15, 16 years old. You know, my dad was really pushing to make sure that I was accurate and I was confident and, you know, I was going to make good shots being by myself. And that kind of really pushed the education portion of archery hunting, and it became more of what I like to do over rifle hunting or, you know, shotgun hunting overall.
Yeah, so where, okay, so I know I had a friend of mine that, well, it was actually my wife's friend's husband, that they were, he was out here from Ohio, I believe. And in Ohio, the area that he was from, they only had, there was no rifle hunting for deer. It was only shotgun or archery. Do they have, like, is there stuff like that in Pennsylvania? Because I know, like, I don't know if the regulations are different there, or is it still like the same, like they have rifle and all the different zone, like the same type of stuff there?
I think every state's kind of different. I know Pennsylvania, they allow rifle, shotgun, archery. The only kind of differences are some states, like here, obviously you can't use a crossbow during archery season. But you can use a crossbow there during archery season.
Okay.
There's no regulations on, like, if you want to use rifle or shotgun. And then again, you can use a bow during rifle season. They don't really care either way.
Yeah, that's kind of the same here.
And it's more so for safety. I think states kind of push the idea of using shotguns just because it's for safety purposes. I know some of the southern states are that way just because there's not a lot of open area for bullets to travel, so they've reduced it to kind of buckshot and shotguns because it's kind of a safer bet on, you know, the travel distance.
Yeah, and I know, like, especially if it's a super wooded area, I mean, if you're shooting a big bore rifle, you don't know where the thing's going to stop, you know, like,
yeah,
you can't see, for sure. You can only see so far through the trees, and then eventually, you know, if your bullet's still blowing through trees, it's going to just keep going and going, and, you know, there could be a cabin, you know, there could be a cabin 100 yards from you, and you couldn't even see it, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's why Ohio did it, is they have a lot of open fields and stuff like that, and a lot of it's built up to where, you know, even though your hunting property may be 200 acres, you know, a bullet will travel well past that. So,
yeah,
you know, they took the responsible measures, I think, you know, certain states understand, you know, hey, we're too, you know, developed to allow rifle hunting. And
Yeah. And I think he was saying too, that there was a lot, or like on his side, he was telling me that he thinks that a lot of it was too, that they had a lot of open area. Mm-hmm. And so it made it more of a challenge because, like, if you had a long rifle, you could pretty much shoot deer all day long. So he was saying that, like, they think that they kind of did it to almost even the odds or something, you know what I mean? Like, as far as, like, drop the intake or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of states do that. I mean, we could talk about that all day here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for instance, you can have cellular trail cameras here, but you can't in Arizona. You can hunt over water in Arizona, but you can't here. It's kind of like,
yeah, it's weird. Yeah, there's so many different random regulations, but so out there, so you did, it's mainly whitetail out there, right? Is that pretty much
all? Yeah, we have whitetail. We're starting to get some southern part of the state, some pigs that are coming up. A lot of people are breeding, like, pigs starting to get into the state.
Yeah.
I've never hunted for them, never seen them, so it's mainly been whitetail deer, turkey. That's kind of, like, the main haul for Pennsylvanians, I think. Black bear.
Do they have a lot of black bear?
Yeah, we've had some big ones. We've had, I think our state record right now is like 900 pounds.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty big one.
Yeah, he was eating some jelly donuts, you know. He was kind of like snacking. walked into the wrong area.
Yeah. So I know that you're into hunting and the archery hunting. What about, like, did you fish and stuff a lot back home?
I did a lot of trout fishing. I mean, for me to go trout fishing here, it's kind of like a pay lake. In San Diego. I've been up in Sacramento, and I was duck hunting up there actually in 2017, and it was really awesome. I was like watching as I'm like duck hunting and calling ducks, I'm seeing trout jumping in the Sacramento River. I just thought it was a really unique experience.
Yeah, and those are depending on where they were, they might have been steelhead too. I don't know where you were at on the river, but they get a steelhead run, you know, which basically look like rainbow trout. But they're like migratory, like salmon. But, so you did a little bit of trout fishing, cause I've never been to Pennsylvania at all. Did you do any like bird hunting out there? I know you have, cause you have a pointer, right?
I didn't get my pointer until I came out here. She's actually going to be 3 years old in the end of May.
Nice.
So, I did take her home and we did some pheasant hunting and we did some chukar hunting. I wasn't really big into that. I wasn't big into duck hunting or, goose hunting until kind of later, down the road.
Yeah.
We did some dove hunting, but it wasn't something that stuck, and neither was turkey. We kind of, you know, if we were out archery hunting and turkey season was open and we had turkeys come by, you know.
You just take one out.
Yeah, we'd shoot one like that. You know, we never actually pursued them the way I do out here where you're calling and setting up decoys. And
yeah.
I think I did that once. And you know, despite what people say, it's so hard.
Yeah.
You know, you can mess up a turkey hunt. That's why I just stick with deer hunting. You know?
Right. I feel like they're just such a unique bird. You think being such a loud, obnoxious bird and a large bird that they would be an easy hunt, but I feel like they're like the complete opposite. They're probably one of the hardest birds to hunt.
Yeah, and that's why I felt like I was actually really lucky to get the bird with my bow this year. I was, you know, I mean, it was a young bird, but nonetheless, the setup was kind of just exactly what any bird hunter would tell you not to do. I was sitting right behind the decoy looking right at them, and they just came in, and luckily they got distracted by some decoys, and that's kind of how it ended.
Yeah, he got like the side, you know, like, or what is it, like tunnel vision? Did you have tom decoys or hen decoys out?
We had a single hen and a jake.
Okay.
And, they
came in all hot.
Oh yeah. There was a group of like 12 jakes.
Oh wow.
Yeah. They were pretty beat up. So I was like, oh, let's see the biggest guy. And, you know, that's the one I took.
Yeah. And they're, man, that like my, I've, cause I've been turkey hunting a few times now, and man, even though I haven't been super successful with it, it like, I don't know, there's something about like when they start coming around and making all the noise, I don't know. It's, to me, it's like when you get within range of a deer, but like more excitement, I feel like, because they're calling. There's like something about the gobbling and stuff that just like gets your adrenaline pumping even more so. And it's like not even as, like, to me, it's not as rewarding as far as like, you're not taking as big of a trophy or as much meat. You know, but there, I don't know, something about the noise just gets you amped up.
Yeah, there was, I don't remember who made the reference, but the greatest mystery that we have to hunting is that we actually fool animals and make them think that we are other animals. And it's the greatest, it was the greatest movement forward. You know, we used to just be out there and then wait for the turkeys to come by. We didn't know, like, oh, they were gobbling. If we make this sound,
yeah,
you know, they'll come in. And then it just was revolutionized by calls and duck calls. And
oh yeah,
and I I firmly believe that when you can fool a turkey or a duck or a deer into thinking you're another deer,
yeah,
you're kind of the ultimate predator in a sense.
Yeah, definitely. I know, like, I went up duck hunting this year, duck and goose hunting up in Sacramento, and man, that's really fun. Like the whole calling thing, like what you're talking about, it gets you pumping too when you watch them start circling around and dropping down and down and down, and you're like trying not to look up, but at the same time you're like, are they still there? Are they coming closer? You know?
Yeah, and that's so like the cool part about that is like, you know, you think about it, and you know, you're sitting there and you're like, oh yeah, normally you have a couple of different types of ducks, but you know, you're running a mallard call, you're running, you know,
yeah,
wood duck call, all crazy different types of ducks, and you're doing widgeons and
teals, and, yeah, you know, there's yeah. So many, yeah, and there's like, I mean, just going hunting with people that duck hunt a lot, like, trips me out, because, like, just their ability to like, notice the different birds at certain distances, and, like, know which calls, because there's normally multiple calls per bird that you can make.
Yes.
I mean, it's, like, a full art form in itself, I feel like. Like you're saying, like, that whole fooling, you know what I mean? Like, fooling the animals, it's like, man, that's, to do it with waterfowl is pretty impressive. But so you started hunting and stuff back home, and then when you came out here, did you get a little frustrated when you came out to California?
I did not hunt right away. It was a difficult experience for me to go from such easy hunting to what do? Where do I go? And yeah. The hardest part for me is, and this is honestly something I still deal with, is the lack of assistance from your fellow sportsmen.
Oh yeah.
On going hunting, and we're talking about public land here. That back where I'm from, there's barely any public land. You go on state game land, maybe 100 acres, and that's kind of what you got. You know.
Yeah.
As far as here, it's like there's hundreds and hundreds of acres, and yet somehow people don't want to be like, hey, just go over in this area. I started my first year, and I was like, how do I do this? And they're like, well, you need to get your hunting license. And I was like, okay, well, I got hunting license from Pennsylvania, so I just used that and got my hunting license.
Yeah.
Well, then I didn't know where to go or what to do or what tags to buy, so I started asking questions, buying maps. Went to the fishing game, went to their field offices, you know, went out to the land, and it wasn't until 2015 that I shot my first deer here.
And you came out in 13?
2013, yeah.
So it took you 2 years?
Took 2 years. Yeah. And my first deer was with a bow. I could never fill the tag with a rifle for some reason. The D16 tag,
Really?
Nope.
That's pretty impressive. That's a goal of mine, is to try to get something with my bow. That's why I really wanted to try to get a turkey this season with a bow, because I think it'd be a pretty good, it's a hard hunt both ways, whether it's a shotgun or a bow, but I feel like you get within the same range either way, and I'm pretty accurate with my bow, so I feel pretty comfortable like trying to get a turkey with it. But I think this season though is going to be the one I'm going to try a lot more. I've never actually even tried for deer with my bow, but it's a whole different game, I feel like.
It's different. I mean, I've kind of switched it up. I have a rifle, I just don't use it. I think I shot enough deer in Pennsylvania to know like it's kind of not worth it anymore to me. You can kind of put the crosshairs there, and these deer here are, they're wary, but at 100 yards, if they don't see you, they don't know what's going on. And I see all the time, like, guys post some pictures, and they're like, shot this deer at 500 yards. And I'm like, is that fun?
Yeah, seriously.
And I'm like, get in there 20 yards, 30 yards, see if it's the same deal, you know? My blood's pumping when I see a deer at 100 yards.
Yeah.
I actually have a video on my pages. I was bear hunting in L.A., and I had some does walk by at like 5 yards, and I'm sitting there shaking. it's something else. And they were like, what is this? I don't know what's going on, but I don't know what he is. You know, it was an experience. And that's kind of like just the change of, you know, the adrenaline rush changes the way it changes. And I'm not saying I'm this expert rifle hunter. I just think there's a different mentality that goes with archery hunting. I think there's a different kind of a divine structure that happens to you as a person when you really become almost like a mountain lion, man. They got to get close before they can pounce, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a lot more, you know, like, I know some guys that struggle with the idea of archery hunting. Like, for example, my wife's uncle, he's a huge, huge hunter. I mean, he hunts like all the time. He's gone and done hunts in Africa. He's hunted like all over the world. And he had never shot anything with an arrow until I think it was like last year he used a crossbow. And for him, he was saying that like the hardest thing for him was not seeing animals drop. He said that like whenever he hunts, he goes, I have a really hard time. Like if you ever watch archery hunting videos, he goes, they don't normally drop. He goes, they take off running. And he goes, and it's just he goes, it's a mental thing in my head. He goes, I know like it's not a, like they're feeling, a lot of times they're not feeling pain or anything. But he goes, it's just a mental thing in my head that when I shoot one with a rifle and you watch it just fall over, like there's an impact and then they're, you know, they lose their life. Or, you know, you took that with the archery, he was saying it's a really hard thing for him to overcome. And he goes, when he used the crossbow, it was a quick and simple thing. And he goes, so he's like, I think I'm going to start trying to do it, but he's already in his like 70s and it's taken him that long to like just even open up to it. So I know like a lot of people have a hard time or some people are just intimidated. Like, I mean, me personally, I'm more intimidated of just making an ethical shot in the moment because there's a lot more, I feel like there's a lot more mistake error with a bow, or more
that's
room.
Something I can definitely talk on. It actually came up today obviously we'll get to, my Arizona hunt in a little bit.
Yeah.
But, the season for A22 down here, it's a draw tag this year, but I entered in a group, with a couple guys. I have like, 2 deer points, nothing crazy. I don't mind using it to get an A22 tag. I almost always feel it when I get the tag. So, I have 2 buddies that haven't shot a deer out here, with a bow. So I said, hey, jump on the group tag with me. You know, I got this good spot. Nobody really goes and deers hunt there. You know, I'll get you out there. We'll set up ground blind. I got a tree stand and I'll get you guys set up. And you know what? Honestly, I'm going to pretty much tell you, you're going to see a deer. You're going to see some does. You're going to see maybe some small bucks. I was like, and it's an either sex tag. I was like, if you sit out here and go here and put in the work with me, you know, I'll get you out here and I'll give you that opportunity. I was like, but don't shoot any deer that are moms with babies or, you know, obviously we all know you can't shoot a buck out here if it's smaller than a live buck. So,
yeah,
you know, and that's kind of what I went over with them. And then one of these guys, he's Nico Rugby, Nick Benedict. Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry, buddy. It's hard to pronounce his last name, but he's super big into hunting. He actually came out with me bear hunting, bought a tag, went 8 miles, and the guy had just overcome a surgery that actually had him like out of walking and doing stuff for like months and months. Yeah. And he came out, did 8 miles, and I was, you know, happy with the amount of effort he was willing to put in, and to see somebody that's like, you know, I'm putting the work, you know, I just don't know where to go. And that's kind of what I feel is lost out here, is that helping somebody get in there. He kind of brought up a great point, is, you know, I'm just worried, you know, in that moment, I got to walk through everything and make sure I make the right shot. And I was like, you know, I'm hoping when I'm out in Arizona, I get a call or a text from him with a picture of him with the deer.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those things, you have to walk through so much with archery hunting. It's like, it's not even, it's like breathing. It's where your finger goes on your release. It's where you line up your sight pin, make sure you have the right range on the deer and know where it's at, especially if you're in a ground blind. He's going to be hunting in a ground blind.
Yeah.
And you know, even though I could walk through that spot 150 times with him, and I've done it myself, even with this turkey, you know, I shoot and I make a great shot, but I'm like, how did I get there? And
yeah,
it kind of follows into repetition. And, you know, I hope he listens to this podcast. And, you know, the biggest thing I can say is when you repeat the steps over and over and over again, keep repeating them. And when you're out in the field and that moment comes where you're shaking and you're seeing the deer you want to harvest, you walk through those steps again, despite the fact of knowing you've done it 1,000,005 times, walk through the steps, the breathing, the pull back, the holds, the leveling, the sights, the ranging. And that's another thing. A lot of people out here forget to range before.
Yeah.
They, you know, if you know how far it is, if you ranged 50 times that tree, range it again. It all changes. And that's the biggest thing is, you know, I'm going to go through with him. I'm going to set him up in the blind. I'm going to put the target out there, and I'm going to be like, range it and shoot it. You know what? And the best way to learn is being in the field. And like I said, if I get that message, I'm going to be a happy person because I share with somebody something that isn't really shared that much these days.
Yeah. No, it's a huge thing. And, you know, like where you're talking about with the whole sharing with the hunting, you know, that's kind of like the whole purpose of me, like starting this whole, the Cali Outdoorsman page and everything that I've done has been more, I've had kind of like two different missions with it, but one of the main ones, well, there's two. One is to showcase people that actually do the stuff out here in California are not, I feel like they're taken very lightly by other people, as far as like, oh, well, yeah, you can't be that much of an outdoorsman because you're from California. And in my opinion, that's like completely the opposite, because when I go to other states, you know, people that hunt deer, that have hunted deer their entire life, have never, like, there's a lot of people that don't ever hunt as hard as we have to every season here in California. Like, the amount of spirit that you have to keep going and keep wanting to hunt, it's just so challenging that the people that actually religiously hunt out here, it's like, you know, it's, they're, I don't want to say they're like elites, but like, you know what I mean? Like they have a lot of drive, versus like in other states, you can do it last minute. Like, oh, you know what? I didn't shoot a deer this year. Let me go grab a tag and I'll go shoot one this afternoon. You know, it's like, we're not that spoiled to where we can just go out our back porch and shoot a deer. Like, you got to put in your work. You got to go try to find the places. There's a lot. And not just with deer hunting, with a lot of different hunting. I mean, quail hunting is like, upland hunting is the same thing. Like, you can't just go buy a shotgun and then be successful quail hunter in California. You got to actually go and do some pre-scouting, like kind of try to find birds. You're going to be doing a lot of traveling, you know, a lot of walking and learning the birds. It's not like something where you're just going to drive onto a dirt road like a lot of other states. They have that where it's like there's such an abundance of wildlife that they can just take a highway, turn off on a gravel road, and fill their limit within a couple minutes or something. You know, like, there's just so much more wildlife compared to, like, they don't have the hunting pressure. And even the same thing goes with fish. You know, like, fishing here is the same, like you were saying, with this, with fish, trout fishing in San Diego. It's like you pretty much have to like pay down there to go fishing, you know, like for trout. Or you got to be a diehard and you make trout fishing trips where you're going to go up to the Sierras or something like that. And it's like you get into it, you hike back up in the hills and you float tube or you fly fish, whatever, to try to get all these hard to get spots. So like, that was kind of one of the missions, was to showcase these people that, you know, like the people out here that are driven enough to do the outdoor things. But then the other thing was to help people that are here and showcase to people what opportunities we have in California too. You know, I think that there's just so many different opportunities in the state of California that people don't realize, as far as hunting and fishing go. You know, I mean, I know.
I think it's underappreciated. I mean, if you look at the numbers, I think they put out that in the early 50s or 60s, there was like 900,000 people who hunted and fished and were outdoors all the time. And now we're down to like 275,000 people that buy hunting licenses throughout the whole state. So we went from 1 million of the 40 million people that inhabit this state down to 275,000 people in 2019.
That's crazy.
So obviously you're a dying breed if you're out here hunting and doing outdoor things. It's almost frowned upon.
It definitely is. It's definitely, I mean, so my wife's never, she grew up here in California, but she grew up in Oxnard, which is a little bit more of a city. It's larger than like where we live at. It's a little bit more. Well, she actually lived right where we went out on that landing for the boat. She lives like right around the corner from there, but it's more of like a city area. And before meeting me, she'd only had wild game one time. She had some deer jerky or something like that. Other than that, she'd never had wild game whatsoever. And, she never even like had fish that somebody had caught. Like it was all like store-bought stuff, you know? And there's so many people, like I meet friends all the time. My own family members and stuff that have never even like gone on a hike or, it sounds ridiculous, but like they literally live their entire life in the city and don't even think about fishing or hunting or not even like fully outdoor. I mean, like even growing their own food and stuff, they're just kind of like, what? No, you just get that at the store, you know, versus like when you go to other states, a lot of people it's completely different. Like when I took my wife to Wyoming this last year, she was tripping out on how big of a thing it was that like when we would go hunt, like when we would tell people that we were out hunting, they're like, oh, what are you going for? Like everybody just hunted. Like that was how they get their meat. So like it was a casual thing to talk about versus in California, you tell somebody, oh yeah, I'm going on a hunting trip. They're like, what are you going to go kill? Like, it's like you said, it's like frowned upon. They're like,
like you murderer. I actually ran into somebody like that when I was hunting with Nick for bear, and the girl was walking with, she was hiking with three other guys. And we were walking past with the bows, and they were like, what are you hunting for? And we were like, bear. And like one of the guys turning was like, there's bear over here? What? That's crazy. We didn't even know. And the lady went into the questions of the that I'll never forget. What are you going to do with the bear? And I went into the immediate, oh my gosh, I have to fight for my reasoning to, you know, harvest the bear. And then I was like, I'm going to eat it. And she was like, the whole thing, right? And I was like, well, yeah, it's illegal to waste meat here, and I don't waste meat. I'm going to take the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, well, that's good. And then just kind of turned, and like all our groupie buddies kind of went back to the hike. And I was just like, you know, people are either misinformed here or like we've lost our way from, you know, we were cavemen at one point, cavemen and women. Yeah. And, you know, at one point there was nothing that we did that was going to the store and buying this food.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we were never vegetarian. We were never pescatarians eating fish. We just ate meat and dirt and mushrooms and whatever was out there that we could find. We survived. And now we're like, You shot this deer. You're a horrible person. And to me, it's like, you know, hey, look, I'm going to live my life. I won't waste this deer. I'm going to thank this deer. I'm going to be grateful for what I got and the opportunity. Yeah. And that's what I share with the people that kind of come hunting with me. And is there's more to it than just where some psychopath that shoots an animal and, you know, eat it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how we're looked at. That we're looked at like we're crazy.
Yeah. You know, what got me into hunting, I mean, it's kind of a little different subject, but, like, for me, it was... Because I grew up here in California. So, like, what you're talking about, how, like, it's, like, almost frowned upon. That's the whole mentality that I grew up around. My dad he never really hunted. My grandpa on my dad's side never hunted. They were both fishermen. They liked fishing, but they never really hunted. My dad ended up going hunting when I was in high school. But that was, like, the first time that it was, like, we went bird hunting when I was, we started bird hunting, like, when I was in, like, junior high, but, like, that was the first time my dad ever went bird hunting either, so it wasn't something that was, like, passed down through generations, like, it was kind of lost, a few generations before us. And then on my mom's side, my grandpa was a big hunter, but nobody else really, my uncles hunted too, but, they didn't really get into it until about the same time that, like, my dad did, as far as, like, and they would go out of state is really what they would do. It wasn't here in California. So, like, I didn't really have an influence of hunters around me whatsoever. And what really got me intrigued with big game hunting was the meat, you know? And that was that, I guess that'd be, like, the way that I kind of overcame, you know, all the other perceptions of hunting was I started looking, I love to cook and I love red meat. And the more and more that I started, like, getting into it, I started realizing, like, hey, like, you know, if you want really good quality meat, the best quality meat you can get is natural free ranging meat, you know, like, so then I, like, really was determined to try to get my own deer. And, just like you were saying, it's like trying to find people to show you spots or areas to even look for is such a pain. I mean, you really got to have some really close friends that are really good at hunting, and willing to share with you, but it's still really frustrating. Like, you, the first few years that I went deer hunting in California, I never even saw a deer when we went, like, not even a doe. And that, like, it's super disheartening, you know, like, when you don't, you feel like you're just going on a hike with a gun and getting looked at funny when you're walking back to the truck, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely understand that. I mean, I've gone quite a few times without seeing deer, and then, you know, not until recently, and putting in, it wasn't even the hard, laborious miles, it was just keying in on features and where the deer are really going and if they're traveling far away, and that focus on kind of where the deer are played into seeing more deer. And now, since this scouting season has started for me and going to Arizona scouting here, I'm kind of scouting here and in Arizona, I've seen so far this year in my one spot where I'm going to take my two buddies, I've seen probably 12 different does, and I just got my first two bucks on camera that are growing their first set, their horns this year.
Nice.
So for me, I haven't harvested a buck in California. Unfortunately, if I see a little Y buck, it reminds me of a little four pointer in Pennsylvania, and I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Can't pull on this. So I end up taking does the majority of the early season, you know, before they breed and go in their cycle, as long as they're alone, you know?
Yeah.
But kind of keying in on what you were saying, I think there's a chart out there that actually shows the protein levels that each piece of meat has, like elk, buffalo, yeah, deer. And I think, like, one of the funniest things I ever saw was that squirrel. Squirrel meat has higher protein value than deer and chicken. And I don't know, because one of the times I used to go to my grandpa's down in Virginia before he passed away, and I would go there in the middle of winter, whack a bunch of squirrels, and we would grill up all the squirrel, and I'd be like, yeah, this is some good stuff, and that's kind of lost, you know?
Yeah. You know, I've never tried squirrel, and I've been, you know, who made me want to try it is Steven Ranella with the Meat Eater guy.
Oh yeah.
Because like not because of his recipes or anything like that, but watching his other like his different shows, like they have that Back 40 show. I don't know if you watched that, but just seeing how much he is super into squirrel hunting from all the different types of hunting he's done in his life. Squirrel hunting seems to be the one that like gets him every time. Like he gets excited like a little kid when they start talking about squirrel hunting. And I'm like, man, this makes me want to go shoot a squirrel now. Like I've never, but they're different than like the ones that we have here. Like our squirrels are not, from what I understand, they're not like, we don't have good eating squirrels around here. We do have some gray squirrels, but in Southern California, I don't think you're even legally allowed to take them. Because they, I guess they carry a disease. So, like, there's...
I don't know. I know there's, like, that squirrel season, but I've never went out to harvest squirrels. I will never go out to harvest squirrels.
Yeah.
Ground squirrels. We don't have, like, a gray squirrel season down here.
No. And like I said, I'm pretty sure it's actually... A friend of mine was telling me that they like, kind of banned it in Southern California. We do have gray squirrels in certain areas, but like they're known to carry a certain disease or something like that. And so they just cut off the, like there's not a lot of them anyways, but then like there is a chance that they have a disease or something. So they just,
man, wait till they find out bears carry trichinosis.
Well, bears are next on the California hit list anyways. I mean, they got rid of mountain lions. They got rid of bobcats. Bears are next. They're going.
Hey, look, I mean, for the longest time, Pennsylvania said there were no mountain lions in Pennsylvania. So I guess, you know, that's one way to do it. Or you could just ban hunting them, you know?
Yeah, that's the bobcat thing this year was frustrating to me because it's like anybody that goes on a hike or out in the wilderness should know that there's an abundance of bobcats. It's not, they're trying to prove that they're endangered. And that's why they're saying that they're holding off on it because they want to do like more counts on it. And
well,
it's
they
like,
just did that with the mountain lions, didn't they? They just said that they're endangered, and then no depredation permits will be issued in that whole range that they showed, saying that they're all endangered.
Which is ridiculous because there's more mountain lions than in my lifetime. I've never seen as many mountain lions as there is now. I mean, they're coming in like where I live at. They're coming into neighborhoods.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, kind of strikes me as, you know, people, you know,
oblivious.
I don't know why, but yeah, I talked to somebody and I guess there's a statistic out there, and I think even Joe Rogan did a podcast with, I forget the name of the guy, he's this big animal guy, and he does all these shows about finding endangered species and stuff like that, and
yeah,
he went in to say, like, you know, California says, yeah, there's actually like 7 attacks a year, right? Where somebody's actually bitten and, or, you know, hurt in some way by a mountain lion.
Yeah.
What they don't report to you are the other 293 counts of a mountain lion stalking, attempting to attack, bluff attacking, or in some way trying to harm a person. Whether
yeah.
it's maliciously or as food, you know, in a mannerism of such, but they only count attacks when it actually, like, you're actually bitten.
Physically
but
bitten.
The attempt of attack is still attack, and what they do is they don't report the truth, so that way, you know, nobody's like, oh, we have to worry about getting attacked, you know, it's not a big deal. There's also a statistic done by the Los Angeles, there's like biologists that were tracking the mountain lions.
Yeah.
And one day, just curiously, I was on my way to go deer hunting before I saw a mountain lion that morning that followed me to my tree stand. I was looking up the statistics of what it would be to see a mountain lion. The statistic is 1 in 10 times. So every 10 times you go in the woods, the chances are 1 out of those 10 times you have been around a mountain lion, seen a mountain lion, or didn't see the mountain lion saw you, and you just will never know that you saw a mountain lion, or could have saw a mountain lion. And to me, that is crazy to think about. I mean, I've been out in the woods maybe 50, 60 times.
Yeah.
And that means I've possibly seen six mountain lions. I've got them on camera, so I know they probably saw them.
Yeah. That's the part that creeps me out. Like, that's one apex predator to me that really, like, I have a fear of. Bears, unless you're, like, within close counter with bears, typically you can, like, kind of spook them unless there's a cub. But you can normally spook them, so it's not like a, at least the bears around here, like, they're not like grizzly bears where they're going to charge you kind of thing. So, like, realistically, like, the only thing threatening and, like, the wooded, you know, the woods and stuff around here is a mountain lion, you know, and they're to me, they're creepy. I mean, like, their abilities, it's to me, it's terrifying that they can stalk. I mean, something that can stalk a deer on a regular basis, and, you know, that's what they have to do to survive. Like, I mean, we try to do it once or twice a year, and it takes us a while, you know, like, and we have technology and we have a gun, you know, they're getting within jumping reach of a deer.
And that's why people are carrying, you know, like, yeah. I know it's legal to carry your pistol when you're hunting and when you're fishing, listed in fish and game regulations, but
you can't during archery season.
No, you cannot, and that's like, that's messed up. What am I going to do? Shoot a deer with a pistol and then show? I mean, if I have to show a member of the fishing game and it's an archer tag, you know,
then you have a bullet hole in it. They should be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I draw. Like, I hunt alone by myself all the time, and I've gone in the woods and the hairs on the back of my neck have stood up. And. And that comes into, like, one of my turkey hunts out here with my friend. We were actually walking in, and luckily, you know, I can tell the difference between a bobcat, you know, doing its mating call and a mountain lion. But that's eerie in itself. If you ever heard them make that sound, you know.
Bobcat?
Yeah, it was just middle of the night. You know, you're walking in to try and not spook the turkey, and you just hear a bobcat going off. Even that in itself is petrifying, and to think, like, you know, there's nothing I could do. I could walk it over. If I don't have my gun and I don't have a knife close enough by, and all I have is my arrows, and God forbid, you know, a mountain lion jumps me, the only thing protecting me is my big pack that I have on my back.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, the next thing in your arsenal is your will to live, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of like, you know, I've heard a lot of about attacks on people, and it's more like older people or young kids. And you know, they can kind of tell, you know, where their range is. And you know what? If they don't ever attack me, then that means that they think I'm somebody they don't want to mess with. So I'll take that any day.
Yeah, I mean, that is one benefit that I think that we have as men going out hunting, is that, like, I feel like we kind of carry that stigma that I'm sure that they can sense, you know, that, like, kind of puts them off. Like, I don't know if it's testosterone, whatever, but, like, or it may possibly could be our sizes too, you know, but like you said, I've felt like it's mainly been, like, children and women or older people, like, they can tell the difference between an easier prey than, you know, they're not going to go. It's like kind of, but you know, what's funny about that though, is that they say that, mountain lions and wolves and coyotes and stuff typically target bucks more than does. And I can't remember, there was something about, I think it was like a combination of different things. And I think it's like that a lot of the times they'll be solo, so they're easier to tire out, or they, like, bucks, like, during rut and stuff are also easier targets, 'cause they're not aware of dangers and stuff like that. But you would think that like a big buck would be the last thing that, you know, a mountain lion or coyotes or something would try to attack. But I was reading something just recently actually about it, and they were saying that there's like a higher rate of bucks that actually get attacked. And I think it would probably lean more towards just because they're by themselves, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, even as hunters, you know, we look at it like this, you know, bucks are stupid, they're in the rut.
Yeah.
Bucks are dumb, you know, mm-hmm. as attuned they are to everything going on and finding, you know, a mate during this time, you know, they're dumb.
Yeah.
You know, you put out a little scent and then next thing you know, there's a buck in front of you and he just followed all that to find some girl and then he's most likely going to die, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, we find weaknesses in
prey on
in
that.
The strongest point of an animal's, you know, genes and genetics and the way they were, you know, geared to live their lives. And, you know, and I think these predators do the same thing. And that's kind of like, you know, it kind of really being here in California, the way that hunting has gone is it's very different to know that you can't hunt predators the same way you can in other states. And now with the fact that bobcat and next bear, I mean, I don't know what you're looking for. You're asking for populations of animals to diminish. You're asking for conservation efforts to pretty much be non-existent in a sense, because I'm basically funding the state by buying a tag that I'll never be able to fill because there won't be enough animals because they're all being eaten.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have an overpopulation of bear, mountain lion, and bobcats, and then you're going to lose populations of squirrels, you're going to lose populations of ducks and turkeys, and you're going to lose populations of deer, and then eventually, you know, we're not even talking the fact that there are wolves in California too. You're going to lose populations of elk, and then what for the state is it going to be when it's too late? And I get it. I understand there are always going to be people that think animals shouldn't be harmed in any way. They should live their life. And you know what? I don't think they're wrong. I think there's a balance. You know what? If I'm gonna eat it, I don't like trophy hunters. If you're going out there to trophy hunt and that's all you care about and that meat doesn't mean anything to you, you shouldn't be out in the woods.
Yes.
Now, if the meat means everything to you and you shoot a big deer at the same time, congrats. I think the best for you, you know what, you deserve to, you know, be blessed with the meat and you know, everything that comes from being an outdoorsman and a hunter. But yeah. when you kind of lose that, that's what also happens. And I think, you know, a lot of people send a bad message when they, you know, shoot a deer, take the horns, and then left 150 pounds of meat. And then, you know, they wonder why people are trying to ban hunting.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I think that, like, me and you are on a pretty similar page, because I know, you know, following your Instagram and stuff, it's like both of us, it's like, there's a lot of hunting content, but probably 75% of it's cooking, you know? And I think that, like, that's, to me, that's, like, the more enjoyable part. Like, and I think that it's almost basically that ratio. It's, like, 25% of it is the hunt, and then the other 75% is the rest of the year that I get to enjoy my rewards from being successful for my hunt, you know? And
you want to know a statistic real quick?
What's that?
About 85% of the turkeys shot worldwide, most people leave the legs out in the woods.
Really? In the woods?
Yeah. Apparently, it's because they're not like normal turkey legs.
Yeah.
They're hard, gamey, full of tendons, dark meat. And I made a good recipe that actually a lot of people really ended up liking. Was I made like a turkey tahine.
Okay.
And ended up making like a whole big thing where I slow cooked it and then I put it in the pressure cooker. And the meat just fell right off the bone and I just pulled the tendons out. And then, you know, Like, that's the thing. Like, I took the whole bird and I already ate half of it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of crazy to think that a lot of hunters in the world leave the legs because, you know, they're...
It's too tough.
They're just too much work or too much effort to put into to cook them. And
yeah.
And that's kind of like, you know, that's a good thing. And I'm glad that California put in that law. Like, if, you know, the Fish and Game catch you wasting meat, you know, they can fine you. Well,
yeah. You know, like my wife, because I did get one turkey a while back, and that turkey we did, I can't remember, I don't remember if it was a Hank Shaw recipe or if it was a meat eater one, but my wife found one and it was a turkey leg barbacoa. I don't know if you've seen that before, but it was really, like, you make little, it basically becomes like a shredded... like a shredded meat, and it's, you know, because the turkey legs are like a darker meat, and basically make little tacos and stuff out of it, and it was really good. I've been waiting to get another turkey so that my wife can make it again, because that's the one thing that kind of sucks is you only get depending on how successful you are with turkey. I know one of my buddies, he gets his limit of turkeys every season, and I'm like, man, I need a but like otherwise, like most people, it's like you don't get to try a bunch of different recipes. You only get a couple shots at making a good one. But we'd love to try other things too, but I really want to try, I want to make another batch of that stuff again. So I want to get a turkey to try the turkey legs. But I get what you're saying though. Like there's a lot of hunters that do that. That'll do. And you know what? To be 100% honest, I kind of find myself at fault doing that sometimes too. Not with like turkey, but like when I go dove hunting, for example, there's people that'll sit there and they'll pluck the doves so that like it leaves the and then they'll like leave the little legs on it and stuff too. And same thing with quail. And to be honest, like I don't know. I haven't found a way that I liked cooking them with like the skin on and all that. I like a lot of the recipes and stuff that I use, I just use the breast meat. So I normally just breast them out. But I know like a lot of other people, they'd be like, well, you're throwing away, you know, 10 or 15 legs or whatever. And it's like, well, I don't have a purpose. So I need to start working on some of the stuff, mainly with like small birds like that. I did start saving like my dove hearts. I don't know if you've ever tried those, but dove hearts are actually really good. And it's not very hard to like pull dove hearts out, because whenever you're cleaning it, they just pop right out. It's just, you know, I just kind of throw them off to the side, and then I get a little baggie of dove hearts, and they're really good little like appetizers. But I feel like there's a lot of different wild game that a lot of hunters overlook meat. Like you're saying, like they just leave the legs in the woods because they don't know what to do with it.
Steve Vanella, his big thing on the one mule deer he shot was taking the tongue. How many people take the tongue? If you were going to ask a lot of your hunting buddies, how many people actually take the tongue?
Yeah.
Take the time to cut out the tongue from the jaw. I guarantee you very few have taken the time and been like, I'm going to take the tongue out of this deer. And I'm guilty of that. I've never taken the tongue from a deer. I've had tongue.
Yeah.
But I've never taken one from a deer. It's not a part that I am.
Yeah.
Am accustomed to investing the time to prepare, and, you know, and that's another thing. Like, you know, there are people that'll take everything. Everything they can. I'll take the heart. I'll take, you know, liver. And
I was just going to ask you, do you eat a lot of the organs?
Yeah, I'm a big heart guy, you know, as long as I don't shoot it. If I shoot it, then there's, you know, yeah, I'm not going to pull it out. But, you know, I'll take heart and, you know, liver if again, we're intact. And then that's kind of where I will limit myself to organs other than, you know, tongue or, yeah, and that's even then. I haven't taken tongue from a deer in California.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things, and I feel like a lot of people don't ever pay attention to the stuff that they are wasting, because they don't know what to do with the meat. Like, I know a lot of guys that literally just take the whole deer to the butcher, and then whatever the butcher gives them is basically what they eat. Like, they don't even do the full processing. And to me, that was what really drew me into hunting, was that I can, you know, raise, or I mean, that I can actually process every part of that animal. And it makes it to where I feel like I'm better at cooking it too. Like, I know exactly what it came from, you know, like if it's going to be a tough piece of meat or if it's going to be a tender piece, just based off of where it came off of the body, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And that's kind of some semblance of like how I feel is I might not have a full butcher shop. And you know what? I live in an apartment. And the last year I carried up in a bloody game bag and into my apartment. And I didn't care what people thought. I didn't care what people saw.
It's groceries, man.
You know what? If you're offended, if you're upset, go somewhere else. I'm sorry that you had to see what you had to see. But guess what? That's how I live.
Yeah.
And there's no discreet way for me to carry a game bag up to the house without somebody seeing it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I don't have a big, like, walk-in freezer to freeze this pieces of meat or, you know. So my goal, in a sense, is when it's 100 degrees and I shoot deer, is to get that process as quick as possible. I'm not slowing down my process to convenience other people, or I'm not going to bring it to the butcher when I can do it myself. And it means more to me to know that I cared for that animal in the sense that it was all me.
Yeah. It,
from the beginning to the thanks to, you know, preparing, you know, when we're preparing, you know, you're out in the field and you're skinning out your deer, you know, how many people are thinking, oh, let's take the rib meat. Or, you know, let's make sure that we reach in and get the real tenderloins, not just those back tenderloins.
Yeah.
You know, and making sure that you get neck meat and
speaking of cuts that are overlooked a lot of the times, I don't think I know of anybody that actually keeps the neck meat, because a lot of the times they just leave it with the head. You know, whether they just pack out the whole head and the neck as one piece and then it just rots for they're going to do a Euro mount later or something, or if they actually cape it out and take it to the taxidermist to have it mounted, a lot of those guys, they just, like, the whole neck meat is just tossed because they just keep it all as, you know, basically cut the animal at the shoulders and they leave it. And that's one that I'm pretty guilty of, but a lot of the times... Well, no, I was going to say my first buck, I've only gotten 2 bucks, and the first one had a lot of bloodshot in the neck. Because I got him, he was, like, quartering away from me, so it, like, kind of went out his upper shoulder into his neck. And so I had a lot of bloodshot in his neck, but then also I didn't know how to properly cape it, and being that it was my first buck, I, like, didn't want to mess it up if I wanted to get it mounted, but then I didn't end up caping it right. Like, I didn't cut it back far enough on the shoulders. So, but anyways, I ended up wasting all my neck meat on that particular buck. This last year though, I ended up getting some of the neck meat, but, I mean, I know some guys that really, like, they make full roasts. Like, they take the whole neck with the bone in and everything.
Yeah, so a part of it is the fact that, well, here's the thing. One, you have to keep your head. If most people don't know this, you're supposed to keep it till after the season closes. And then you can get rid of it, unless you call and ask and be like, look, I shot a doe. You guys know I shot a doe. I reported this. You know, do you want me to keep it? Or if it's a buck getting mounted, you don't even have to worry about it because of that taxidermist. But the main thing that ends up coming up is like, oh, if I take this piece of meat, how am I supposed to prepare it?
Yeah, definitely.
I was just talking about a neck roast with somebody, you know, deboned, obviously, but I wrapped it in bacon
mm-hmm.
and then seasoned it And then I covered it with maple bourbon. So Crown Maple.
Yeah.
I think it's like a bourbon that they have or whatever it is. I put it all over that and then smoked it.
Nice.
It was a pretty good meal. And, yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, like I said, a lot of people are afraid of what they don't know how to cook and what they don't know how to prepare.
Yeah. You know.
And it's kind of something they just have to work on.
Yeah, and you know, I think that it's just intimidating to a lot of people. Like if you're not big on cooking, like you're kind of a recipe type person, it can be kind of intimidating. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I have like probably 5 or 6 different wild game cookbooks, and I've never followed a recipe in it. I've looked at different recipes to kind of see how they went about preparing certain things, like certain pieces of meat. But like one of the biggest issues that I found with wild game cookbooks was that they always seem to use parts that most people don't know what they are or save, you know? I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but it's like, Stephen Ranella from Meat Eater does this all the time. A lot of his cookbooks, it'll be like the neck tenderloin. And you're like, what? Like, if you took your meat to the butcher, they don't give you that piece or they don't tell you what piece that is. So if you didn't actually take it off the neck, you don't know what the heck, like, you know, what piece of meat you need for that. Or they'll use specific weird things and they'll be like, oh, yeah, you got to wrap this in coal fat. And if you didn't take the coal fat off, like if you didn't watch Meat Eater before and learn about how you can take off coal fat, why would you have coal fat in your freezer, you know? And so there's like a lot of recipes in the books that like they make it really hard for people to cook their own wild game if they're recipe type of people. And I like for me personally, my wife didn't cook a lot before we were married. She's gotten more into cooking, especially the last few years. She's gotten a lot more into actual cooking. But wild game was like complete, like she's a recipe type cooker. Like me, I don't ever follow a recipe. Like even I'll make, like my wife's like, oh, let's have spaghetti tonight. And I just literally start throwing seasonings in with some tomato sauce and canned tomatoes. And I come up with my own spaghetti sauce. And like, I don't even remember what it was. I just add stuff until I like the way that it tastes. And then that's what we're having for dinner. And my wife's like the complete opposite. She's like measuring out each specific seasoning, cooking it for this long, then turning the heat to this or whatever, you know, like she's a very recipe oriented person. So for her, it was really hard to cook my wild game because she didn't know like what to do with it. Like it wasn't, it, you know, like all recipes normally are like ground beef or, you know, like all these farm raised animals or cuts that we don't normally get with wild game. So like for me, a huge thing was getting a meat grinder and it, like making different sausages or just ground meat in general, to help her like use it more, if that makes sense. You know, like putting it in the form for somebody that's not used to cooking wild game. And I like my wife, like she still to this day will be like, how should I cook this, you know, this ground, whatever meat it is, like pork, you know, wild boar or, you know, or venison, like venison or antelope or whatever it is. She's like, how should I cook this? And I'm like, cook it just like any other red meat, you know, like that's like when it's ground, just cook it like red meat. It's not a, you know, you add your seasonings to it, whatever you're going to do. And you cook it just like another red meat, you know? And it's really helped her integrate. I mean, now, I don't even remember the last time we bought beef. I think the only thing that we really buy is chicken. You know, as far as, like, meat goes. Like, we pretty much live off of stuff that I hunt. And she has grown to really appreciate that and really enjoy it. Because I pushed her really hard into just cooking the meat, you know, like she was super worried. That's the other thing too, is I feel like a lot of hunters and stuff put their meat on a pedestal, if that makes sense. Like, you know, like, this is a filet mignon. This is a chunk of backstrap. I have to cook this because you're going to mess it up or something like that. And I'll tell her, I'm like, yeah, that's a piece of backstrap that's supposed to be the best cut of the deer. So, you know, cook it special like you would a special steak. But other than that, just cook it like you would steak, you know, don't like. And it's helped her tremendously be supportive of my whole hunting. Just getting it to where, like, now we're literally, like, living off of the meat that I hunt every year, you know. And that's, like you were saying, I mean, it's totally different hunting when you are, like, that is the reason you're hunting, is for providing meat, you know, for your family. You know, it was one thing, it's hard to change, but one of the things I was curious, since you archery hunt a lot, did you notice a big difference, in, like, meat loss from archery, like, either way, like, or with archery or with using, like, a rifle? Like, did you notice a meat loss difference, like, when you're, you know, when you're hunting, like, with a bloodshot type deal?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of lucky that, I mean, I've missed deer. Yeah. I think it's a lot easier to miss deer with your bow.
Yeah.
And I've definitely missed a couple times here. But I've definitely had two different shots. I've had one that was perfect behind the shoulder, in and out, between the ribs. Nothing affected whatsoever, other than, you know, the heart was cut and the lungs and stuff like that. But another one I had where I didn't really find any blood is, I went in and then it got stuck into the other shoulder. I did lose a little bit of shoulder meat with that, just because the deer was running with the broadhead stuck in the shoulder. So, in that instance, there was meat loss, but strictly between the two, I can believe that there is a significantly lesser amount of meat loss when you're archery hunting.
Really?
As long as you are, in the best way of the form, as long as you're making ethical shots.
Yeah.
As long as you're, you know, you're not shooting down through the deer's spine, and as long as you're not shooting it in the neck, you know, you're not really losing meat. And if you're trying to shoot it through the shoulder, any archery hunter would say that's a risky business, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the rifle hunting, a lot of people, you know, they'll shoot the deer in the neck and it drops it instantly, but then you lose the neck meat. Or a lot of deer hunters that shoot with a rifle, they will shoot the deer in the shoulder, in the front shoulder, like, shoot it right in the front shoulder.
Yeah, well, go for the heart, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to shoot it and kill it. And unfortunately, you're going to probably lose both front shoulders.
Yeah, which is a lot of the meat. Especially on deer around here, I mean, I'd say you'd be at probably 60% of the meat is just on the two hind ends, and then you get like 20% off of the front ones, and then another 20% throughout the rest of the body. But yeah, if you go blow through both your things, I mean, you're losing almost a quarter of the deer right there, just in meat loss. And that my first buck that I shot, it went through the shoulder, and then like out the neck. And that, like, I ruined a whole bunch of meat, and I was super bummed. This last one that I got super lucky. Well, actually, it was kind of I ended up getting a headshot on him. He was super close, and so I felt confident that, like, it was one of those things, like, I didn't want to shoot for the body because I didn't have a clear shot at the body, but I knew that he wasn't, like, a mounting deer, so I was like, well, if I shoot him in the head, I'm either going to have a clean miss or he's going to die, you know? And I was like, okay, well then I'll go for the head. If it's his time to go, it's his time to go. And man, if he would have been a half an inch lower, he would have it wouldn't have even hit him at all. But it hit him right where it needed to hit him, and he dropped. And then it was awesome because I had like literally like no meat loss whatsoever on that buck because it was a headshot.
And those are the awesome ones that you can harvest, you know, your heart and your livers, and there's no mess that you have to clean up kind of inside. And that's also another nice thing about rifles. When you hit that inner cavity, everything explodes.
Yeah.
In the instant. Nicest sense of saying it, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah. No, it definitely does. I mean, he was... That was I feel like as a hunter, especially like the first times that I've went hunting, I feel like, and hunting alone too, the last thing you want to do is see an animal either get back up or take off. I feel like that's like the, like your heart like almost drops when you're like, dang it, did I get a good shot? You know, like, cause especially if you're by yourself, cause it's like, you can't turn and ask your buddy, like, hey, did that look good? You know, like, am I going to be chasing this thing? Should I even chase him? Did I completely miss, you know? So, like, when that thing dropped this last season, I was like, I mean, he just went straight down. Like, there was not even a jump, no kick, nothing. It was like, boom. And it, to me, it was a great feeling because you're like, it's a relief that you, like, completed the job painless and effortlessly for them, you know? And it was it was respectful to the animal. Like, you weren't having to go shoot it three or four times or something like that. And to me, that's like the worst. When you have to have something like that happen, it's really hard.
Yeah, and definitely. And going on with why I kind of archery hunt is, and kind of continuing on this route where we kind of more talk about archery and the difference and why I've primarily chosen archery hunt was because I feel that I've come to a point in my life where I can ethically make a shot with a rifle. I can take the shots I need to, and the satisfaction of harvesting a deer with a rifle is not the same. The limitations I push myself to when I'm archery hunting will never compare to the hunting I do with a rifle. And I think, you know, when you, like you said, you're going to try and get out there and harvest a deer with your bow, you know, I don't know if you're trying. The best tags I found out here are the either sex tags. Yeah. You know, you can go out there and look for a buck, but if you see a doe, you know, you're still good, you know.
Yeah, they have a the one around me is it's A32. It's archery only, either sex.
And that's the Ventura County. That's my third option in my draw tag. So
yeah, and it's a late season, and I did that specifically because around here, I'm like right on the border of A zone and D13, and A zone is insanely hot around the time the A zone is here. And it is more up north, too. Like, we're on the bottom part of A-zone. But up north, the deer are just different. Like, they're out cruising around at noon when it's 115. Down here, it could be 90 degrees, and you won't see a deer all day. They're only there for, like, 30 minutes in the morning, and then they bed down, like, all day. So, D13, that's why I've been more successful with D13. And I actually, both my bucks, I harvested the last week of D13. To me, it was like, once it starts dropping in temperature, I've noticed me personally being able to see more bucks. And A32 starts, like, I want to say it's either a week or 2 weeks after D13 closes. And like I said, like, both my bucks I harvested in the last week of D13. So, and I typically see quite a bit of does and spikes. I just don't see a lot of shooter bucks, like a lot of ones with a fork. So I'm hoping right. I'm hoping that with the A32, it'll increase my chances of seeing a bigger buck, because they seem to be coming out more later in the season like that. But if I don't, I mean. The last few times that I've gone up, I'll see it. I'd say anywhere between 5 to 15 deer in total. Not that I'd be within archery range, but I can get within archery range with at least a couple each trip. So I feel pretty confident as far as like getting on deer. It's just going to be a matter of trying to, like, I want to put in some time and see if I can find, like, locate a decent buck. But if I can't, like you said, I have the backup of, like, at least I'll get some meat in the freezer from getting a doe. And to be honest, there's a lot of, I listen to a lot of different, like, podcasts and stuff where they talked about that, like, on Meat Eater, he talks about it a bunch. And I think I listened to one on Joe Rogan, too, where they were talking about the, like, the hunt, the deer management. And like how important it is to actually hunt does in areas, because like bucks will only breed so many does in the area, and you want them to breed with the younger does that are going to be better mothers. You don't want you don't want a big mature doe around like too long, because then a buck's going to be basically kind of wasting his breeding with her when he could be breeding with a healthier, younger doe that's going to, you know, be able to mother the fawn a lot better and take care of the fawn. So there's like a lot to it when it comes to deer management that California is just not on any type of animal management. California Fish and Game has been horrible with altogether. I don't think that there's any specific species that they're doing a good job at managing the hunting regulations on in California.
That's what they're going to do. They're going to eventually, like I said, with the whole mountain lion thing, mountain lion will kill all the deer. You know what they're going to do? Yeah. They're not going to open up mountain lion. They're going to close deer hunting.
Yep. And that's, it's ridiculous. I mean, and they do the same thing. And that's another tangent that I can go on. And I don't even know if you've ever even heard of it or paid attention to it, but they have like the steelhead. I don't know if you've ever heard about the California steelhead issues. But as a fisherman, there's big controversy, of, I guess you'd say like conservation. There's two different, like theories of how you can conserve species. And in California, the theory that is winning, that has the most popular vote, is to just close it and let them do their thing. And I don't agree with that, but that's like the popular vote in California. And unfortunately, somehow they fool sportsmen into believing that that is okay to do. And they get us to like literally, like they undermine our wildlife, basically, like our zones that we're allowed to go and hunt and fish are getting restricted and restricted based off of them getting people to support this idea that you can close and just let the animals do their thing and they'll come back, but then they never reopen. Because the numbers don't.
The easiest and most explainable way possible for people to understand California fishing game, and this is kind of a big thing for me. Do you follow their Instagram?
California Fishing Game?
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you once, this entire turkey season, with all the people who have shot a turkey, have you once seen any of them post anything that was not a flower, an otter, or some cute post about California wildlife? No, yeah. No harvested turkeys, nothing about hunting. I haven't seen a single post about anything besides, I think it was the one little post about, oh, the tags are open for sale. Like,
yeah,
that's it. Like, they don't care about what we're doing. They just want to keep the funding coming.
Yep.
And that's it, period. The there is no longer a care for the outdoorsman, if you would, to put it in a perspective of not saying we're some hunter. You know, the outdoorsman or outdoorsman, however you want to, you know, range it without saying I'm scrutinizing the hunting community of men and women or something like that. Yeah. You know, I just think, you know, they've kind of lost the care for what we do. And, you know, even if you notice with this stay-at-home order, they consider hunting a sport.
Yeah.
And they've banned sports, so, you know.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of a whole subject that I can go on forever about, but my idea behind that is that we have a generation, and it's mainly, it starts in California, but I feel like California is a big trendsetter, but we're in a generation of people that are they already have lost touch of where everything that they use in their everyday life comes from. Like not even talking just meat or fish, but even, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen that post where there's the people that kayaked out to the oil rigs in San Francisco to protest oil drilling in kayaks, which are made out of oil. The amount of ignorance for what they use on their everyday life and their everyday comforts in today's society, people have completely just lost touch of what is needed to create their comforts of living. And that's like my theory, is that if people were to realize what they actually needed to have their comfortable life, they would change their opinions on so many different things and so many different levels, and it would solve a lot of the problems that we have, especially, like I said, in here in California, is because people have just completely lost terms as to where they're getting, like, where their supplies come from, you know?
Yeah, and that's gonna take some time, and yeah, you know, and we're not going to be, again, we could talk all night about that. That topic's a big one here.
It's crazy, man. Like I said, that's a huge, huge thing. I could talk about that one for a long time, about our whole generation that's coming up. And you know what? It goes even farther back than just our generation. I mean, my in-laws and even my grandparents and stuff, a lot of them are so disconnected from everything, you know, like all their resources, actual resources that we use, like I said, like that we use on a daily basis in our everyday lives, you know, like where our power comes from, where our water comes from. And that's, you know, I think that's the biggest issue, is a lot of people just taking advantage of technologies and gotten disconnected. Huh? Yeah, they got disconnected from everything. And like I said, not even just in the food, you know, like, I mean, I think that it's funny with this whole, you know, coronavirus thing going on, this pandemic, how much it's opening the eyes to a lot of people as to where their food comes from. Because, like, you think about it and it's like, wait a minute, why is there no, you know, why is there none of this? Why is there none of that? Like, what? Why is it stopping? And it's like, well, it's because you don't live anywhere where, you know, if you live in the middle of the city, it's not the food that's the problem. It's not like getting the food. It's the transportation of the food to you, because you don't live where that, you don't live in a sustainable area, you know? And in California, especially, I feel like there's so many people that got disconnected as to where everything comes from. And they didn't realize that, like, you know, that could be compromised, versus people like me and you, mainly with our food. It's like, we know exactly where our food comes from, and we don't have to worry about, you know, all these diseases that go through the food markets, and, you know, like what other people did to our meat, or, you know, or if there's gonna be meat at the refrigerator, you know, at the store. The worst thing is if we just don't get, you know, we're not successful in hunting, but that's why there's different kinds of animals to hunt.
and that's kind of something I want to move to out of politics here.
Yeah.
Kind of back to, you know, spreading our roots from where we are. You know, a lot of people have seen, and I've posted a lot about coming up my Arizona hunt. And with, you know, the time passing by so quick, you know, we're doing a summer hunt in Arizona.
When are you guys going?
We're going to go around August 29th.
It's going to be hot.
So we're going to be at like 7,000 feet up. So we're looking at about like the highs of maybe 70, 72.
Okay, that's not too bad then.
Yeah, it'll be pretty bearable. Actually, that area gets some snow in July, so.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's possible. I mean, they say there's like, it could be hot, but it's really towards the desert areas. But one of the biggest thing is, like I've mentioned a lot, is there was a lot of help from the Instagram community. You know, there were a lot of people that I reached out to. I was like, look, you know, I don't know where I'm going. I know where I want to hunt. I just don't know how to approach it. I'm not familiar. And you know, there was a lot of people that were willing to help. And, you know, I could try to list them all. But, you know, it seemed that when I was reaching to the out-of-state world, that's where I got the help. And, you know, this hunt for me is a really good one. It's with two of my good friends. I got Matt from Carney Brook Outdoors and then John from Raw Instinct Outdoors. They're two different guys, you know, they're two different guys that totally different mindsets on hunting and, you know, but the one thing that bonds us is like the outdoors, you know, the way we hunt, what it means to us, you know, having the food. And that's kind of funny because, you know, one of them lives in Maine and one lives in Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow. They're coming to Waves then.
Yeah. And we're going to come out there and, you know, they're unable to kind of fly out and come and, you know, do the scouting. And that's kind of like a good thing for me that I'm close enough that I can drive. And I've learned so much. I mean, we found out there's like in a unit that really isn't about big, giant elk. I got a 350 inch elk on game camera just last month.
Wow.
I saw my first buck in there, muley. I'm not a big guy, but, you know, it's reassuring to know, like, I've seen a lot of does, and just scouting, I've seen elk, and I think one of the big things is, like, don't be afraid to broaden your horizon, and yeah, sometimes the payments, if you would, are a little steep on the pocket, you know. It's going to be $460 to hunt there for archery over the counter deer, but you know, if you put in the time and the effort, you know, you can fill that tag, you know, just take the time. And that's why it's going to be a good, unfortunately I'll miss the opening of my season here in San Diego, but you know, building up for this hunt, it's kind of just do the scouting, take your time, walk through everything, practice, make sure you're ready to go, and then eventually, you know, when it boils down to it, you know, you can walk through these things, and that's what's going to make you successful, is that effort you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. And I don't think people who think we just hunt and shoot animals and have fun and call it, they don't understand, like, I have a connection to being outside that I can't get anywhere else, where I just kind of disappear into a world that I couldn't explain to anybody except another hunter, where, you know, that bond I have with, you know, the guys that I hunt with, the people I call brothers in a sense, you know.
Yeah.
We share something that people don't ever see. You know, people talk about how cute that otter is that's cracking a shell, but we've sat there and watched probably deer give birth, or we've watched deer breed, or we've watched, you know, predators, you know, jump on mice in the fields, or, and you know, there's things like, you know, it's not about killing, and we've seen so much more, you know, we've heard so many more things, and people just lost sight of that, you know, I'm grateful for the ability to see these things and hear these things and go out there, and that's why I'm hoping, like, a lot of people will watch my hunt, because I could go home without a deer and yeah. know that I'm going to be happy that, you know, I put in all that effort and, you know, knowing that, you know, I may have spent $460, that to me is nothing compared to the memories I'll make with my friends and, you know, the knowledge I'll have for next year.
Yep. Yeah. You know, there's, I don't know if you've ever listened to the, now I'm going to forget the guy's podcast. It's, he's down Long Beach, I think is where he's out of, but, I'm forgetting his thing now. Anyways, I listened to one of it. He's a new, I think it's maybe been a year that he's been out. But he had a podcast with a guy, from Oregon that I've talked to and stuff actually afterwards, because he just had twin baby boys. But he's Rev, I think his Instagram's like Rev Kong or something like that, and it's Kong Outdoors, like King Kong. Mm-hmm. And he had, when they did their recording, their podcast recording, he had a really cool I guess like breakdown of kind of like what you're talking about, like that whole, when you get into the woods and like how it's the whole experience of being out there. And his breakdown, I feel like, was one of the best that I've heard, is how that, like, his theory is that, like, in the world that we live in, like our everyday life, it's really easy for things to get kind of blown out of proportion. And like the things that we stress about, the things that we worry about, they're really minor things if you look at life. But then like when you get out in the woods and there's a simple factor when you're in the woods. It like brings us back to like a primitive, natural, instinctual feelings, where it's like you no longer have the stress of like, if I'm going to do, you know, if this bill's going to get paid, or if I'm going to make it on time to this or anything like that. Your goal, you're out there and you're out there for a couple days or whatever, but like you're out there with a group of guys and your goal is survival. And it's like a survival instinct therapy kind of thing is what he was like basically kind of describing it as. And it's like, and then once you're out there, he goes, even if you don't get you don't have a successful hunt, like you don't come back with meat, you still come back like with that clear-headedness to where like those little minor things in your life that were stressing you out and worrying you and stuff before, it like clears your head and it makes you realize like the more important things in life when you come home. And so it's like a renewal, you know, I don't know if that makes sense, but like I really like the way that he put it, as far as like going, like, cause I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, and to me, I do it a lot more. Mine has been a lot with fishing. It always has been fishing, but I mean, when I go hunting, I get the same thing now too. But like throughout my life, I've had the same connect with fishing. It's like getting out on the water to me was like the best mental health thing that I could do for myself. You know,
I agree with that. And I don't know if you knew this, but knock on basically John Dudley made a bow for Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
And Chris Pratt is like a big Guardians of the Galaxy guy. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if he came out that he was a hunter, an outdoorsman, you know, he'd be ridiculed. You know, he wouldn't be able to work in these roles that he pursues. And a big thing that if you never saw this, you can look it up, where he did an explanation to somebody on why it's nice to be a hunter. It's an experience as a hunter through his eyes. And he said, because you're out there, you're there before everything's awake.
Yep.
And then, you know, the sun starts coming up and the birds start chirping and the deer are moving around you and things are coming to life. And it was like you were alive before everything else came to life. And you were there at like the beginning. Like, it's kind of almost like it's like the day renews itself, and you were there to witness it all happen, and come alive. And to that, to be something, you know, of his stature and, you know, the person that he is, and to see how divided he is by his fans and stuff like that, you know, to have him explain, like, it's more than just hunting, you know, it puts me at ease to know that, you know, there are people who understand, like, it's more than just hunting.
Yeah.
And that's what anything, and that's another thing, you know, again, we probably could go on for hours and talk about, you know, but if there was anything you take from hunting, is that it is not hunting. It is not solely about taking the life of an animal.
No.
There is an enormous amount of respect that you need to have, not only for yourself,
mm-hmm.
but for the animal, for the wildlife, for, you know, there's everything. You know, you go out there trudging around in the field, you know, you may not know it, but you may step on, you know, some plants and stuff that, you know, you shouldn't have stepped on, or you may throw your wrapper on accident, or maybe even on purpose people do it, you know, they just throw the wrapper down and something comes along and eats it and chokes and dies, and, you know, we have an effect, a footprint we leave behind every time we go out there.
Yeah.
And if we don't do our best to make sure that footprint is a beneficial footprint to the environment, you know, we're just wasting what we have, and we have proven nothing in our corner for why we should be out there harvesting these animals and, you know, utilizing nature.
Yeah. You know, like, I'm just going to touch on this really quick, because, like I said, both of us have said this, but we can keep going on that topic a long ways. But to me, one of the things, you know, I've talked to a few different people about this, but as far as my theory on the whole losing concept of where everything comes from, I was talking to somebody recently about, like, our meat, for example. Our country, it's more our country, but our culture around us and stuff have become so dependent on things that they don't realize where they come from, that, like, if for some reason, and the reason why this got brought up was because I was talking to somebody about fisheries, and how, you know, like, if you were to go to the store to buy a fish to eat, they have wild caught salmon, or you can get farm raised salmon. In our heads, we've been trained to think that the wild-caught salmon is better, right? Like, in our culture, like, if you get wild-caught, it's, like, the better, the higher end than the farm-raised, right? But the farm-raised was brought to the table for people at market, if that makes sense. So,
yeah, no,
like,
I understand.
And fishing is one of the only industries that's constantly getting taken advantage of. In big game or in red meat, they already figured out that that is not a sustainable way. If they gave everybody deer meat at the store, we wouldn't have any more deer in the United States really fast. You know, because you can't commercially go and hunt deer to sell at market, because you would wipe out the population of deer because it's not sustainable. And the same thing goes for fish. But the problem is that they haven't realized it enough yet. They think that fish are just there and there's millions of them in the ocean. And they think that they can just take it and give it to people in the store. Well, there's millions of deer in the United States too. But if you go out there and you take a couple million a year, it's not going to take very long until you run out of deer. And it's the same issue that they're having with, like, all the salmon and halibut fisheries. And you know, a lot of the saltwater, more local ones, they're starting to catch on to that. And they are putting a lot of, preserves and stuff in the ocean. But what I was, my point was, though, is that, people think that it's okay to buy wild caught. Or even, you know, like, people, I know some people that have bought venison because there's places in Texas that can raise it and sell it. And they think that it's okay to take, you know, the higher quality without putting in that effort. And it's like, to me, it's sad that instead of, like, they look at it and they recognize that it's healthier, like the fish, for example, it's healthier to buy the wild-caught salmon, but they don't realize the impact that they are doing to the fishery by not going and sustainably taking what they can catch, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, yeah, I understand.
And it's the same with the hunting. Like, if, like, for example, me and you, if we are not successful, that means we're going to have a bad year of eating, you know, like we're not bringing home venison. But somebody else that doesn't even care about where their food comes from, they shouldn't get that right to eat good quality venison. They got to eat cow, you know, but it's a disconnect from the food, you know, and it comes back to that whole root of just not realizing their actual impact to, like I said, wanting red meat. You know, it's like the sad part is that they are pushing to close their own desires, basically. You know what I mean? Like, they want red meat, but then they don't want factory farming, or they want wild caught salmon, but they want to close all the fisheries, but they're closing them to everybody, not just commercial fishing, you know? And so it's just the whole generation of people that are, it's super frustrating that they're disconnected so far from it. And like you said, like they might have seen a cute otter, but like they didn't get to go out on a kayak and watch him playing around in, you know, in the kelp patties or something, eating fish or, you know, eating crabs or something in actual nature, versus like if you're a kayak fisherman and you get out there and you're seeing the otters going and hunting and watching them, that it's a total different aspect than just seeing a video that, or a post from Fish and Game, you know, like you get more of a connect to all that. And it's unreal. To me, it's unreal how much like it brings reality back to us. And like I was saying, that one guy, the way he put it was like that, it's humbling to us. Like, it brings us back to earth. Like, I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I take it in a religious aspect as well. You know, and people don't have to take it in a religious way, but, you know, unfortunately, there are scriptures from the Bible. You know, some may agree with, some may not. But God in himself said, I put these animals on this planet for you to utilize, to harvest, yeah, to eat, to manage, to do with in the way you see fit, as to, you know, create your life and your abundance. And in that, he said, I'm God and I make it this way for you. You know, in those aspects, you know, we've split the world, and I'm not trying to talk on, you know, am I pro-religion? Should we practice religion? None of that stuff. But there's something you will learn if you took 30 minutes to go sit outside. And anyone who's listening, if you have not done this, I would ask that you go outside. You go and you wait till 30 minutes before the sun's supposed to rise, and you go out and you sit there. You go enjoy your cup of coffee and just sit there and listen and watch and see how different you think of nature and being out there when you watch it unfold before you. And I think you'd see a significant amount of change with people just making efforts to, yeah, look at it in a different light.
Yep. No, and I totally agree. I mean, like I said, one of my big efforts with doing the Cali Outdoorsman thing is to try to help people see what's in your backyards too. Like, you don't have to go to Arizona to go get that experience. We do, because it's an adventure for us no matter what. But, and we like seeing new places and, go hunting different things, but you can go out to, I mean, there's tons of wildlife areas here in California that you can just go and do it. Like what you said, like get there early in the morning. And that's my favorite, honestly, that's my favorite part about deer hunting is just getting in the woods before daylight. And then, like you said, watching everything just come to life. And it makes getting up, you know, in the middle of the night worth it. You know, like I'm not really normally a morning person, but when you are able to experience that whole coming together of everything, like the coming to life of everything in nature, like you said, I mean, it's just, it's a pretty unreal experience to just witness that. And I feel like people, I mean, you've been hunting years now, and I'm somewhat newer with the big game, but like no matter what stage I feel like you are in your life, I feel like that is still like an admirable moment in your hunting experience, is that like the sunrise and just like watching everything. And to me, it's crazy that it doesn't seem like it matters where you're at. That sunrise moment, there's so much wildlife everywhere. You know, you can be in the middle of the desert where there's just a couple sage bushes and you'll start seeing all kinds of stuff start moving. You know, like you didn't think there's anything out there but tumbleweeds, and then all of a sudden stuff starts moving at first light. Or you can be in the middle of the woods where like you haven't heard anything but trees creaking for hours, and then all of a sudden that first light, it's like all these birds come out of nowhere. And it's like you said, it's just like crazy, almost like a religion experience, you know?
Yeah, but it's very uplifting. And you know, if I was gonna, you know, kind of end on a high note for hunters and kind of, you know, what we do as conservationists, but in another sense, you know, we help preserve those things. If you didn't know, billions of the dollars we put towards tags and draws and, you know, these $500 plus tags that we buy, you know, the billions of dollars we put into conserving these things, you know, take advantage of them. I mean, if you're going to put billions into conservation, take advantage of what you get.
Yeah.
And understand that, you know, like, nobody throws away their money. So every year, you know, don't throw away the land. Don't trash it. Don't take care of it, you know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, the best way to help promote what we do and how we do it, and, you know, to help show people that, you know, harvesting an animal is more than just the killing portion of it, if you would, the taking the life of the animal. You know, our part starts the moment we step foot out of our vehicle. You know, it starts where we park the vehicle. You know, it starts what wrappers we decide to put in our pack instead of leaving in the woods, you know. And you know, unless somebody took a walk with us in the woods, they wouldn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, I know we're kind of pushing on a longer time period here, but I just wanted to ask you like one more thing. Since you've been archery hunting a lot, you know, probably actually more than anybody that I really know, what would be some pointers for somebody that was wanting to get into archery hunting? Like what would you recommend? Like if somebody's never even shot a bow, like what would be some of the, like just a quick, like little steps of what you would recommend them to, like if they were already somebody that's been hunting, but like they wanted to get into archery hunting, like what would be some things that you would just recommend to where they would be comfortable, you know, going out and trying to harvest a deer?
Practice, when you finally decide, I'm getting to that portion, you know, most hunters, they have a guy who's their friend who bow hunts.
Yeah.
Talk to that guy, you know, pick his brain, get the information that you are looking for. You know, it's not like it, every bow is different. Every bow company is different. There's a bow out there that's for you.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You can shoot any bow, any brand, any way with any arrow, and it will harvest the deer.
Yeah.
If you want something that's for you, customize the way you want it, the color you want it, look around. You know, take the time. If you don't have a friend, you know, that archery hunts or know anybody, or you know, you're just listening to this, there are archery shops out there, you know.
Yeah. That's one thing I feel like I've noticed, you know, like you were saying earlier, that it's really hard to crack into the hunting, you know, the aspect here in California. But I do feel like as far as archery, there's a lot more friendliness to archery hunters, as far as like if you go into an archery shop and you start asking them, like, say you want to tell them you're wanting to go hunting and stuff, it's not like as frowned upon as if you went into like a gun shop. Like they'll actually kind of help you, and it probably has to do with a lot that like you can actually practice there at the shops too, versus like with a gun, you got to go to like a long range area to be able to like sight your gun in and stuff. But like, I feel like there's a lot of help just at archery shops for somebody that was trying to get into, archery hunting.
Yeah. And I would also understand, like, there's a difference between an archery shop and there's a difference between an archery hunting kind of shop. So just beware, you know, you can get the same Hoyt bow, but at the end of the day, when you go to a regular archery shop, you're coming out a little bit with more of an empty pocket. And I just would say to anybody really starting up is do your research into what exactly you want to do. If you just want to, you know, practice for a little bit and then maybe later hunt, you know, don't dive in and putting thousands of dollars into a bow. But if you know, like, your goal is to hunt, I mean, I would take the time and save your money and put it in something that will last you a few years, you know. And that's kind of something that I didn't really think on. I kind of bought, like, ready-to-hunt bows, and you can buy that, and that really helps the beginner hunter with saving money, because it's normally a package deal. You get your sight, you know, everything. You get a quiver, you get, you know, all the bells and whistles. All you need to buy is a release and some arrows, and you're shooting, you know.
Yeah.
And those things are definitely worth looking into. Ready-to-hunt packages, ready-to-shoot packages, and, you know, asking the questions of what do I do, where do I go. There are people who won't help you. Unfortunately, that's how we're living these days. But no, like, you know, myself, you know, obviously you, and you know, there are a few people that are willing to help, and I got friends that are willing to help, and I hope that my friends that I take will, you know, eventually, you know, when I'm done hunting that spot, or, you know, when we are hunting that spot, you know, they take their kids, or, you know, they take their friends, and those friends use it in the right manner. I mean, it's public land, you know, it's anybody's land.
Yeah.
But, you know, I show them because they're willing to put in the effort and they're willing to make the attempts to do everything the right way and learn everything and work hard to put in that efforts towards harvesting an animal. And, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into just that, and that's another thing, you know, don't start archery hunting unless you're going to put in the work that's required to be an archery hunter. It doesn't start and end with buy a bow and then I harvest deer the next week.
Yeah.
There's a lot of practice and there's a lot of repetition, and that's something we hinted on before, and that's, you know, especially if you know, we're not even touching on people who want to do traditional style archery, you know.
You mean like recurves and stuff?
Yeah, longbow recurve.
Yeah. You know? That's some crazy stuff. I went through a phase where I shot a lot of archery, in like around junior high-ish. And I still have I had a bear recurve. It's a little short hunting one. but it's like, it's got like a 60-pound pole on it. And that thing, man, I mean, I got really good with it because it was like, I shot it the most. My dad had a really nice Hoyt with a dual cam setup and stuff. And I didn't like it because we shot mainly within 40 yards. And I was too accurate with it. And like, not bragging, but like, I was ruining arrows too much. So I was like getting frustrated because my dad would get all pissed because, you know, like I was blown through a bunch of expensive carbon fiber arrows. And so I had my recurve and I got pretty good with it, but I never would have, even as good as I got with it. I mean, I with a recurve, I was even getting Robin Hood arrows at like 25, 30 yards, which I thought was pretty cool, but I still would never, I never felt confident enough with my recurve to actually say like I wanted to go hunting with it. So I have a lot of respect for guys that are actually, I would say that are successful with recurve and longbow hunting, because I know that there's a lot of guys that think that they can and that don't actually, you know, that aren't successful, but guys that actually put in the work and are really are good at harvesting animals with a longbow or a recurve. I mean, it takes a lot of courage just to go, but I've heard a lot of stories too of guys that just try to go out there and do it, and it's like you really got to put in a lot of work with a recurve or a longbow to actually be successful. But in any type of hunting, but yeah, like you said, that's a whole other crazy subject. But all right, man, well, I'm sure you're probably getting tired. You got a young one that gets you up nice and early too, huh?
Oh yeah.
So we can go ahead and end it. Was there anything else that you wanted to add to your to it, or
thanks, man. I appreciate getting to do a podcast with you. I hope, you know, more people start listening to your podcast and understanding that there's different viewpoints of everybody, you know, what they see and what they hear day to day. And again, if you want to start hunting, and I've had a lot of people approach me actually that are coming to California or live in California and want to hunt, and I'm willing to help you. I know you're probably willing to help them as well. Yeah. I've seen actually somebody that's pretty new to hunting go out with you actually recently on that dove and pigeon hunt that you went on, and turkey hunting. He's now going turkey hunting, and that just goes to show, you know, we're willing to help you. There are people who are willing to help you, and we definitely are. So if you did listen to this podcast and took the time, and you're interested in hunting, or you know, don't know where to go and just want to talk to us about it, we're definitely willing to do that. So
yeah. And you know, like, just kind of touching on that, I was just gonna add that, like, to me, I mean, I'm a type of person where like people contact me all the time on Instagram. I have probably a handful of people that literally message me almost on everything that I post, which is a lot of stuff. So like, I have a lot of people that I talk and I conversate with. So like, if if people are listening and like, you guys are afraid of asking something or something, like that I won't respond, or, you know, you're not gonna, it's just a waste of time or something. I know that you've responded to me on stuff, not like even before we were like knew each other really. And I'm the same type of way. Like, if people message me, I try to respond and like you were saying, like, help them out as much as possible. But then like another thing that my kind of rule of thumb with the whole taking people hunting or even fishing is, I get a lot of people that reach out to me that say that they want to, but then when it actually comes down to it, they never actually like show up. Like, I'll invite them, and you're only going to get invited so many times before it's like, okay, this person really doesn't want to go, you know? So like, to me, that's the biggest thing is like, I'll take you hunting or fishing, but you got to want, you have to want to go. Like, just because you saw a picture and think it's cool and you're like, hey, take me next time you go, doesn't mean that like you're going to get, you know, you're going to get taken on the adventure of your life. Like, you gotta want to go. You know what I mean? Like, everybody that, like that, the guy that you were just talking about, I believe that's my, now I'm drawing a blank on his name and I feel really bad about it. Kelly, it's my friend Kelly. Yeah. So he actually had reached out to me before he went and got his hunter safety course. And he asked me how he could get into hunting. And I told him, I go, here's the first thing. And the first step is one of the hardest, I think, especially here in California, because you have to get your hunter safety course before you can go hunting. And I'd say 95% of the people that I tell, yeah, you just got to go get your course done, don't actually do it. I don't know if you've had that problem, but like people will be like, yeah, I want to go hunting. I'm like, okay, just get your hunter safety course. As soon as you get it done, come back to me. We'll go do it. Cause I don't do the courses. I don't, you know, I've thought about actually doing the courses so that I could, take more people out, but people have to it's not hard. You just sign up for the class, go do a 1 day class, or some of them are 2 day, and you just get your hunter safety course done. And to me, that shows a huge initiative that you actually want to hunt. And then of course, like if once you get it legal, yeah, I want to take you out hunting. And I have no problem taking people actually out. I don't like telling people where to go. I don't know. That's kind of my own person. I don't know if you do that, but I would rather take somebody, especially if they're like a new hunter, and kind of show them how I treat the land in that area.
I take that route. I mean, I'll tell people where I've seen deer, if I already see them out hunting and stuff like that, because I'm willing to share. But I've definitely had people that are like, hey, I would love to go hunting. And I'm like, get your license and I'll believe you.
Yeah.
And get your license and I'll know that you're serious about going hunting.
Exactly. You're not going to let them drive your brand new truck if they don't have a driver's license. Like, just go get your license. And then we'll start talking, you know what I mean? You have to show some initiative to actually want to get out and do it. But no, I really appreciate you touching on that, because like you said in the beginning, that is a huge fault to a lot of our outdoor community here in California, is that people are very secretive and it's like almost frowned upon with a lot of people. So yeah, if you anybody listening, if you guys do have questions or stuff, you can message either one of us, and or even just following us and asking questions about stuff that we post or along the way, you know. So
yeah, 100%.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on here, and hopefully we'll be able to actually get out. We haven't actually been hunting yet. We've only been fishing together. But did you eat all that fish yet?
No, not yet.
No chance. Yeah, we had quite a bit of fish that day. Like it was a long day of fishing, but yeah, we definitely came back with quite a bit. I think we just finally cut through all my old fish, because we had. I'm trying to remember when was that trip? That was the opener weekend, huh? So that was March. Yeah, because I had taken a trip in November.
It was the 8th of March.
Yeah, and I went on a trip in November. There was like a veterans trip that I volunteered with, but like we end up normally getting fish too. And so I had fish from then. So I think we just literally cleaned out the freezer of all my old rockfish. So now we're going to start cutting into that fishing trip. Fish lasts me a lot longer than red meat. Red meat I'll go through really fast because I eat it almost daily, and then fish I only eat like maybe once a week or something.
Oh yeah, it's good fish, trust me.
Yeah. So all right, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on here. Like I said, hopefully we'll get out there and go do some hunting soon. Or at least go on another fishing trip or something.
Yeah, so we'll see what tags we get this year.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be awesome. I'll probably be in contact with you about getting some more pointers and stuff for the archery thing, because I really want that to be a kind of a goal of mine this year, is to get something with a bow. So
yeah, whole new world.
All right, man. All right. Well, you have a good night, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. Sounds good, man. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
All right, guys. So that was, like I said, that was Tim. What did I say? It's Tim Reeser. Now I'm drawing a blank on how he pronounced his last name. Yeah. Reeser. And he has, his Instagram page is TMR Outdoors. And he is located in San Diego area in California. Like he said, he's from East Coast, but, well, not coast, I guess they're inland a little bit, but, he's been out here and he's a huge archery hunter. And like he said, he's open to, people, if you got questions and stuff about archery hunting or hunting in general, you know, feel free to reach out to him and message him. He's a real person, just like myself. And likewise, like if you guys have questions for me or something, always feel free to, message me on, the easiest way is probably to message me on Instagram. I don't check Facebook messages as much. My accounts are linked, but Instagram's the easiest way. And I believe Tim's the same way. He's pretty good with responding on, Instagram. So, if you don't follow him already, go on Instagram and follow TMR Outdoors. And, yeah, we, like I said, he's a great page to follow. He's got a lot of cooking stuff, a lot of hunting stuff, and his primary thing is archery hunting. So he has a lot of pointers and, does videos and stuff on training. He makes his own arrows. He's got a lot of really good content if you're, interested in getting into archery hunting or, cooking wild game too, because he posts a lot of stuff about cooking wild game. So, all right, guys, well, that comes to a conclusion on, I believe this is episode, I think it's 12, episode 12, I believe. I'll have to take a look, but anyways, that's not really important. What's important is I appreciate you guys listening in. Hopefully we didn't bore you. And, if you guys have any questions or anything for me or Tim, feel free to contact us on Instagram, if you guys are interested in being on my podcast or would like to hear from somebody specific, send me a message or something and we'll try to get them on the podcast and give you guys some more content to listen to. All righty. Well, I hope you guys have a good night or good day, whatever time you're listening to this at. And I will talk to you next time. All right. Thank you. Bye.